And I think, we've got it. Welcome to the Tin Biscuit Podcast. And today we've got a new guest that is Sam Lucas.
Right, yes, thank you very much.
Well, cheers for coming on. The reason I've got you on is because I found you. It was by accident, to be fair. I was just looking for something on Amazon and your book popped up. And I took a look at the back, the blurb or the blurb. Is it called the blurb or the blurb? That's like a back of a book.
Well, it's what we call blurb with a B on the end of it.
Right.
Blurb.
Good. Yeah. That's all right. Because I think I've been calling it the blurb for like half my life. Anyway, so I read that and it sounded good. Your style of writing, just from reading the blurb, sucked me straight in, and I got your first book. And I just loved it. And I'm back on the second book. But I want you to tell everyone what the book's about, because it's not a normal book, to be fair. So you tell us what it's about and we'll go from there.
Well, it's comedy science fiction to start with. Mm-hmm. And some people think, what's comedy science fiction? So it's about two Russian cosmonauts named Dmitry and Yuri. And it's the start of their three-month tour on board the International Space Station. Now, we are set in a slightly different universe to the one that we know.
Some might say it might be the same universe.
Yes.
Go on, well, no. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, well, the Earth's flat in this universe. And they started a three-month tour, and it's their job to look after the cameras that are aimed at Earth. And they do this by maintaining the cameras by adding an elliptical black card with a highlighted blue edge, which makes the Earth look round. And really, the initial story could have been two guys in a pub having a conversation, because it's, as you know, when you read it, it's very heavy on dialogue, because it's written in a play format.
Yeah, that's one thing I did notice, and like when I got it, I thought, is that going to put me off it? Because it's the first time I've read a story. I mean, I've read scripts because I've got the bottom scripts, and I've had to read other scripts for things. But I thought, is that going to put me off? But instantly, it sucked me straight in. So what I thought was initially could have been a problem wasn't a problem. So that's like sort of good as well.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's a play, but not a play, because it doesn't really deal with positioning and stuff like that. It's really when I decided to do it in that format, it was because I've read a lot of books, and when you start getting the he said, she said, he gesticulated after everything somebody says, I find that a little bit tiresome, and I wanted something that was kind of flowing. Maybe the fact that it's in two Russians as well might put people off, I suppose. The topic of the book as well, when somebody looks at it, think, oh, what's this about?
I love Russians. That's like sort of, that's like one thing that made me get the book as I'm like, well, because it's Russian and it's set in a comical sort of sci-fi book.
Yes, well, you've got them on board the International Space Station, and it really just covers just less than a week with them in the first book with them on the space station before, as you know, catastrophe strikes. And this really is the start of a long journey for Dmitry and Yuri, because there is nine books.
There's nine books. Have you got all nine books written then?
I've spent the last 2 years writing. So I have written all of the first drafts for the whole nine books. I finished about 2 months ago, the first drafts, but obviously you have to go back and have to edit that. Mm-hmm. So what I'm working on at the moment is the next three books, which is called Downfall. And that's in part one, part two, part three, because it was just too big to have with one book. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be about the return to Earth. But talking about Beneath the Dome, which is the title of my book, that just deals with Dmitry and Yuri on board the International Space Station. And it's really to do with their conversations and them getting to know one another. Some of the main themes for the book, I mean, I don't know if you picked up on some of the main themes. Obviously, one is food.
Yeah.
Yuri talks about food all the time. There's a food shortage in their society, so food's a very dominant thing. The other ones are obviously conspiracies of the 20th century, but yeah. I like doing that light-hearted matter, you know.
I was going to say, when I found out, not giving too much away, but you sort of, that you sort of said the earth is flat, because it's right at the beginning of the first book, that I just thought, I didn't even see that coming. I honestly thought there was going to be a space and there was catastrophe, then there's this, then you get onto things breaking, snapping and things like that. So I just thought, I'm going to have to get the second book. So I'm halfway through the second book, which is nearly double the first book.
Yes, absolutely. Well, the rest of the books are all more the second size. They're all double Good. The first book. The reason for the size of the first one is purely cost purposes. It's right. also an introduction, where I think if you give somebody a lot to read, and comedy is well subjective, and I think people have only got so many chuckle muscles they can use within a sort of 2-hour period.
Yeah.
So there's lots of reasons for me wanting to more or less give the first book away. Mm-hmm. And I've donated all the profits I've got from the first book so far to charity.
Oh, brilliant stuff.
So the first book, I mean, I think it was last year, the end of last year, the food bank, local food bank, something that's happened throughout Britain that's come up in the last sort of decade, hasn't it? There's food banks throughout Britain.
Yeah.
So with one of the main themes being food, I wanted to tie in with a charity that connected with the book. So I chose a food bank. So local food bank, they got their first check last year. I think it was just £500, but even so.
Just.
Yeah.
That's quite a lot of money. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the second one as well, I mean, I'll have to sort of rework what I'm doing price-wise with the continuing books, just because of the revenue that one obtains yeah. for this is not a lot. We'll see what happens there. But the next three books, you'll be glad if you enjoyed these two books, will be out in probably July.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sort of working on the covers and the back blurb, which I find far more difficult to write about than the actual book.
Yeah.
I find writing very easy when I'm sitting at the computer and just putting on the old Russian accents. But the blurb, because you're writing that in the third person, you know, you're stepping out of yourself and you're telling people what this book's about. You're writing yeah. in a third person opposed to the first person. But, so is there anything that you want to ask me about the book that you found interesting or maybe concepts that you hadn't come across or...
I found the first concept of them in space brilliant. I thought that's good. And then you throw in the twist of this modern day theory at the Earth's flat. And it's covered by a dome and it's hung up. I don't really want to say too much if people are going to go out and buy the book because I think they should read it. But I do like the little stories of the watch, how somebody choked on a fish bone, how they've known each other for 12 years. And he just says, how am I only finding about this now? I find out about, it's so nonchalant that they didn't think of anything about sort of him not bringing anything important, not reading up. He just brought the food, the alcohol and a mouse. And then it just sort of falls apart from like there. But I'm like these little backstories, it's just good. But like you've got a way of writing and there's another guy as well who's got the same way of writing that sort of brings you in. It's like not a hard book to read, and as soon as you bring it in, you're just there. I mean, if you like stuff like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and Red Dwarf, you're sort of yeah. gonna love these books. So that's right. maybe why I do like it so much, because like when I was a kid and I think it was Thursday night, they used to put Quantum Leap on, Red Dwarf and things like that, so all yeah, that sort of thing appeals to me. So So there's only two books out then at the moment, is there?
Yeah, the Beyond the Dome came out the end of last year. I think it was September 2019. I wasn't quite sure how to space all of this out. And I did find that I was promoting the first book, trying to get money for the charity and push beneath a dome.
Yeah.
That it was, once I got my brain in that promotional marketing sort of side, it was killing all my inspiration and my creativity. Because I was thinking, there's a big story here. I mean, the problem happened was, I wrote the first story and I handed it out to people I knew.
Yeah.
Mostly people that I go to. I play the ukulele, as I think I probably mentioned on my website. And I go to somewhere called the Salmon Bothy each month. And it's an open mic night.
All right.
And you just got to go there and you perform stuff. And well, I perform comedy songs in a science fiction vein, I suppose. So there's not much difference between my songs and my writing. So lots of people know. I've been going there for a few years and people know me. So I gave a few copies to a few rough drafts to people I knew at the club. And the first thing was, they loved it and they said, are you going to write another one? And I thought, oh, well, you know, the first one sort of is a quick book and it finishes. And the intention was to be a bit like The Italian Job. I don't know if you've seen The Italian Job.
I haven't seen the original. I've seen the remake with like everyone else in it.
Michael Caine, at the very end of it, I've always liked that sort of the ending where it's up in the air. If you haven't seen the film, it ends up there on a clifftop in a coach. And the gold
got the gold balancing,
and there's about 20 or 30 guys in this coach, and they're one end, the gold's in the other, and if they move, they fall over the cliff.
Yeah.
And I thought, what I kind of want, I want a story that sort of finishes like that the first time, but then opens it to something else. So you're finishing the story going, you can't leave it there, and that's a bit like that film. You feel at the end of it, you go, well, you can't leave it there.
That's like one thing I did notice. It gave me the same feeling of an end of a series where, just say it's Breaking Bad. I'm just pulling Breaking Bad out of the air because that's probably one of the best series that people wanted to see. And it was like, I can't wait for the second episode. And that's what I was like with your book. So I ordered the second book just a few chapters before I finished the first book so I could go back on to it, because I was that eager to see what happened to him if they could get, I can't say too much because people, you really need to get these books. It's not an hard read. And it's no disrespect to you, but it's not one of them books where you have to think about things. It just naturally comes to you and it's naturally enjoyable read. It's just funny and it's easy to read, and your style of writing instantly sucks the reader in, and you're basically there in the corner. You like sort of see Hank. You can go past Hank's room and see what he's doing. Then you come into the craziness of these two Russians where they think they know each other, but then they're linked from the parents when one of their uncles had a business, the dad's, and it's so it's all linked together, but they don't know this until they're saying, and like saying, well, you know, it's this, that, and the other. And it's just really good. I just wish I could say more, but I can't. So, but people need to go in and buy it.
Yeah, there's quite a lot. And, you know, obviously you're talking about the two fathers having chicken businesses.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, you obviously, Yuri, there's a little bit of a confession when they get on board the alien ship in the second one and Beyond the Dome. I don't know. Have you finished Beyond the Dome?
No, not to them yet. No.
Right, no, I better not speak about the Dome then.
No.
Yes. So, and I better not mention anything. There's so much more. I mean, obviously, because I've written the 9 books now, you've only just touched on the start. I haven't even really, after the first 2 books, got into the story. That's what I like about it. There's so many, what you call, I think they call them Easter eggs. You know, when yes. You put something into a story that you just read past. But they do it in films all the time.
No,
where
yeah.
If you're not really observing, take exactly what you're looking at and what's being said, you just brush it past you. And it's, I mean, on that second viewing, you think, ah.
I mean, like, the watch story was funny. And, like, you see that joke in, like, sort of like other things, like Only Fools and Horses and things like that. And they go so what's it got to do with? And you go through this big, long story, and it's got nothing to do with the thing that he asked the question about in the first place. And he went, oh, I must have forgot that. You know, my dad's watched this, watch that, watch. So, but how did you get your style of writing? Or is it just something that comes naturally to you? Or did you say, I'm going to have a different style of writing? Did you always wanted to be an author, and now the science fiction? Got loads of questions to ask you, so we'll go back to your style of writing first.
Okay, right. I'll tell you how the whole thing came about. It's probably quite an interesting story. I was actually working on an album, believe it or not, and the album, which I haven't released yet, is called Love, Death, and Starships, and it's basically a comedy science fiction album where I write a lot of comedy songs, played on the ukulele and various other instruments. But I came up with the idea that I wanted to link all of the songs with these two Russian cosmonauts on board the International Space Station. And you just have Yuri twiddling the dial on his radio going, I'll tune it to a different station, you know, and it would be like that. And with him tuning it after each song, he's finding a different radio station, and that's why, because the album has got so many different styles of song on it. And I came up with that idea. So I thought, I'll just write a little script, a little bit of conversation for the two of them to have between each song. So I started writing this, and that turned into Beneath the Dome.
Right.
Just by accident, and I thought, I've got to book it. And I started to really enjoy the process. And I thought, I quite like this. And I liked the way I thought, okay, because I'd started writing just dialogue, it automatically drifted into being in a play format because I started doing it as a mini script for these two characters. But then right. I thought, well, because it's heavy dialogue, it's basically the whole story is told through two people talking to one another, isn't it?
Yeah.
Two guys having a chat. That's why I just, the premise behind the whole thing is it could have been two guys down a pub, but let's put them into outer space.
Well, that's another thing, because I do like films. I'm not a massive reader. The book's got to be good for me to read. I'm like, so I'm not just saying that. I'm not really, I do read, but I get halfway through a book and I leave it and I come back to it in a week and I'm like, I can't really be bothered. So it's got to be certain books, and that style of writing completely sucks me in. And I find with films, it's got to be a really good film if it's just going to be based in one sort of situation. And your first two part of the book so far are based in one sort of situation, which reminded me of Red Dwarf trapped on a spaceship, and it sort of escalates and goes into mad adventures and things like that. But yeah,
So in the first book, you've just got Dmitri, Yuri, you've got Yuri's mouse, Boris.
The mouse that starts everything off.
You know, and obviously you've got his bear, Rupert Vich, which he keeps his cigarettes in.
Yes.
This is the other thing I thought, let's put it on the space station. Let's have gravity as opposed to no gravity. You know, so I instantly start off saying, well, that's just to tell the masses, you know, because I've always been intrigued by the International Space Station in as much as why the women who go up there have long hair. Because they sort of, it's almost as if, well, it's fake, you know, the space station. You know, it doesn't really exist. Because you always have the women with the big hair, don't you? You think,
yeah,
you're going, and all that wiring is all loose in the space station, isn't it? It's just reams and reams and loads of wiring everywhere. And you think, well, surely all that hair going about would cause a lot of static electricity. And I'd have thought, as a safety precaution, people would have had short hair.
Mm.
But what do I know?
So just going back to the flat Earth thing, I like you a believer of like flat Earth then? Or is it just something you thought you'd implement?
Well, the thing is, when you first hear about flat Earth, okay, in the 15th sort of century, people thought the Earth was flat, and if you sailed the boat, you know, it'd fall off the side of the planet kind of thing, didn't you? But the flat Earth thing, it was something that the wife was watching all the time on YouTube, all these videos about flat Earth. And I, first of all, I was quite anxious about the whole thing, thinking this is quite nauseating. You know, just think, really, is the Earth flat? And the more you start looking at these documentaries, you start to get sucked in. You think, well, what do I know? When what feeds the conspiracy and why conspiracy theories are out there is because, let's take the Earth, for instance. There's up until recently, there have been no photographs of the Earth since 1972. But even recent photographs of the Earth are only stitched together in Photoshop. There's not somebody who's gone up with a camera and gone back and taken a photograph. If you take all of the moon missions, why did they travel 100,000 miles before they took the first photograph of Earth? I mean, it's stuff like this that starts to feed it. I mean, if you said to me, do I believe in flat Earth? Well, I probably think the Earth is round because, you know, I've wasted a lot of time studying the cosmos, as the Americans would say, the cosmos or the cosmos. You know, if you look at the planets and the stars, you can see outside your own window that everything rises in the east and sets in the west. That's the sun, the moon and the stars. It all happens that way. It all rises in the east and sets in the west. And it's the same every night. As long as you've got a clear night, you can see it. Now, if you start looking at the Polaris, which is the northern star in the sky, you can see that it stays in that position and we rotate around it. So we are definitely moving in a circle. But whether we're flat or not, like pancake, who knows? So, I mean, you'll watch Cassiopeia constellation and you watch the, I think, Ursa Major, which is the frying pan, they call it. You'll watch those stars and they'll move around the northern star. So you think, well, okay, we are rotating. But the interesting thing about it is that rotates around the North Star. But then you have this interesting thing where everything comes from the east and goes to the west. And it rises. So you can think, well, we must be on an axis of about 26 degrees, I think it is. So if you look at things like that, the sun is round, the moon is round, but they both could be flat.
Well, is the sun and moon even real? I mean, I've heard people say from the sun distance, the sun shouldn't be doing that. Because anyway, that's not what this... That's a crazy theory, but yeah, it's
But the theory came about was the flat Earth theory. I mean, a lot of stuff. I've watched a lot of Ancient Aliens. I don't know if you've ever seen that program, The Ancient Aliens.
I've seen it a few times.
Well, I watched the whole series. I got the whole series from my wife because she likes all this kind of stuff. She's interested in the Bigfoot, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But it's all kind of tongue-in-cheek. I think it's like this. I deal with all the conspiracies of the 20th century that are out there. But if you take it all too seriously, you can get really wrapped up in it. So you
go down the rabbit hole, yeah.
Yeah, well, I touch on flat Earth, I think alien life. A dome being around the planet, plague, the Earth in quarantine, a fake virus is touched on.
I think that's very apt for what's going on at some like the minute.
Well, I was reading through and I've got a little line here from Dimitri, and he says, imagine informing people that contact with others was dangerous and could spread plague. Is one of the lines, and I was reading through the whole thing. I thought, gee, was that so apt now for something I was writing back in 2018?
Yeah,
the whole thing. But I mean, there's lots of little stories in it, isn't there? So I mean, the ketchup plague is and that's quite an amusing story, you know, with the Yuri's cousin. But obviously, moon hoax is the big thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, Dimitri's having to.
Sorry, go on. No, I was just about to say, I believe we went to the moon, but I do also believe that there might have been something on the moon and that basically said to us, like, aliens say, don't come back, because I find it very strange in this day and age, the way technology is moving so fast. If, like, you compare from the first iPhone out to where we are now, it's a small amount of time, but there's a massive growth in technology. And to say we haven't been back to the moon since the 60s, 70s, to now, and Elon Musk yesterday doing his private space launch, I find it very hard why we haven't been back to the moon yet, because that would be the first place to go for maybe a settlement, because then you could at least have some sort of base there to get things out further ahead. So I find it very difficult to believe that if we have been, why we haven't been back. And like people do say, there's the dark side of the moon we never see, and is there something there that said to us, don't come back? So, but that's one theory of the moon that I tend to find that better than
one. I mean, I don't know if you've ever looked into, you know, the moon missions, the Apollo moon missions of the 60s at all, or ever studied any of that. I mean,
I do like the odd conspiracy, and like I've studied the paranormal and everything from since I was young, and I like the first words weren't "it's a great step." I do believe that there's things out there. Maybe they did come across something, because like there's reports they like was hearing music and whistling, and like, I mean, the communication went down for a bit, didn't it, when like they went there, because apparently they saw something around a crater. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, the whole thing was, did they go to the moon? I mean, there's lots. I mean, there's an awful lot of time and people invested and money invested in something if they didn't actually go ahead and do it. But what feeds a conspiracy is stuff like the Van Allen radiation belt, which I refer to as Van Halen in the book. You know, I mean, that starts at 400 miles, basically, and goes up to about 36,000 miles. There's an inner belt and an outer belt for the Van Allen radiation belt. And since the Apollo missions, nobody's been into that belt. On average, an astronaut only goes about 230, 250 miles up. And I don't think anyone's been any further than 360 miles since the Apollo moon missions. So it's, when they say they're all astronauts, it's not exactly a great feat, is it? You know, and if you drove 360 miles in your car, you wouldn't think you were something fantastic, would you?
No.
So, I mean, the other thing is you've got the radiation levels. I mean, I've got some notes here. Let me just check on. I think Alan Bean was the fourth person to walk on the moon. He's not a name that really people know. They know about Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin. But Alan Bean was the fourth person, and in an interview, this is me quoting him now, "I'm not sure we went far enough out to encounter the Van Allen belt." Then after being informed that where the belt was, he then changed his stories, and then we went through them.
Oh.
So this is an astronaut who went to the moon, but is only hearing about the Van Allen belt for the first time in an interview 30 years later. And says, "Oh, well, we never went far enough out." Well, if they were just orbiting Earth, they didn't go far enough out to go through it, did they?
No.
So,
no.
I mean, you have stuff like this. Then you've got, there's a few snippets for you. You've got last decade, there was a chap called, I've got some notes here, Kelly Smith. He's an engineer working for NASA, working on the Orion project. I don't know if you've ever heard about the Orion project at all. It was something that just sort of disappeared. It was supposed to be the next generation spacecraft, you know, the space shuttle, something that was bigger and better. Now, you've got the mission was supposed to be just the first mission to travel 3,600 miles. Why 3,600 miles? I don't know, but that was it. This is a quote, right? "The Van Allen belt, an area of dangerous radiation." Okay. "Radiation like this can cause harm to sensors, guidance systems, and other onboard electrical equipment. Before we send people through this region of space, we must solve this problem." This is somebody speaking in 2015, or I think 2010. I can't remember when it was. That time passes. Mm. But somebody, a NASA engineer, talking about they still need to overcome the problem of going through the Van Allen radiation belt. So, and that program, like everything else, 10 years down the line was scrapped. The components were given away to a car manufacturer, you know, all this kind of stuff. I mean, what's happened with Richard Branson? Here you got a guy that was supposed to be starting a space program. You know, people paying $100,000 just to get on board, just a ticket, just to go up 60 miles or something. And that's fallen flat in its face, isn't it? So all these kind of things really keep feeding into the frenzy. I mean, you've got people like James Collier, Bill Kaysing. They all wrote books like Was it only a paper moon? We never went to the moon, all this kind of stuff. So there's lots of stuff out there. And the big thing for me, because in my business, the last 20 years was advertising, graphic design, and photography. Right, cool. So I've been a photographer for many years now.
What camera do you use? Canon or Nikon?
I've used a few cameras over the years. I mean, the last thing I was using was actually a Pentax. But that was mainly because it was a package where I got a load of lenses with it.
Pentax, that's good cameras, Pentax were.
Yeah, so old style. I mean, the last camera, although it was a digital camera I used, it actually didn't have a digital display. You still had to use the viewfinder.
Right.
But digital cameras opened the whole world for everyone, hasn't it? But it's all moved on to iPhones and stuff. Now, what was it talking about?
You were talking about the Oren spaceship. Richard Branson was charging $100,000 for a ticket to go 60 miles up.
Photography is what we were talking about, right? This is what we were talking about. Yes, photography. Now, there's been a lot of stuff about the shadows on the moon and where they were. Now, you've got Buzz Aldrin coming out of the lunar module. This is on the mission to the moon, coming out of the lunar module in shadow. So it's in shadow. Now, they talk about there was only one light source on the moon, and that was the sun. Okay, so he's coming out of the other side of the lunar module, on the dark side in the shadow. And he looks like he's lit up like a Christmas tree. And you think, well, this guy's in shadow, and you can see every little detail of the guy. And if you look at his heel on his boot, there's a little highlight, which you would get from lighting. Like when I look at you yourself just now, I can see you've got two square lights in your glasses.
Right.
That's because you've either got a computer in front of you or you've got some sort of lighting system. Now that's causing light effect. On your earphones, you've got what I would call a hotspot where the light is hitting, bouncing off of it. That's right. You can probably see that yourself.
Yeah.
Now on his heel, he had the same thing on the bottom of his heel. And that's another one of the controversies. They call it the so-called hotspot controversy, which you have to say, if somebody's in darkness and shadow and at the back of the sun, how did that hotspot get there unless you had studio lighting?
I do know Mythbusters did something on like the shadows on like one of their shows.
Yes, about that was hogwash, wasn't it? I mean, the whole thing was they were trying to use the surface of the moon using cement or something, you know, and just saying that that was going to light this person up.
Yeah.
You know, it was defying the laws of physics, I think.
Well, Americans
so I don't.
Yeah, they aren't going to put a TV program on and like say we're not sure if it went to the moon or not, are they? Not on an American.
No, all Americans are very proud of the fact they went to the moon. I mean, it stands to reason that they're going to say, yes, we went to the moon. I don't know. I can't say that we did go. I can't say we didn't go. I know that due to the fact that over the years, you know, we're struggling with really decent photographs of the Earth. We have the Hubble telescope, which went up into space in the 90s, which was going to photograph the universe and the cosmos. And the first thing they wanted to do, we thought, great, we're going to get good pictures of the moon. What's the first thing happens with the Hubble telescope? Oh, we put the wrong lens in. We put it at the wrong angle. Then they have to have the permission, don't they? It's cost billions, this thing. And they have to go up there with another bit, a bit of glass and something else, you know, and change it out and change the angle. But even after all these years, some 30 years later, they still never used it and pointed it at the moon. Why didn't turn around and point it at Earth? We still don't have any really good images of the Earth. So, I mean, that feeds into the flat Earth society. It feeds into that sort of frenzy of people going, well, where are the pictures? If you go on the internet, any pictures you see of the Earth, our little globe, are all photographs of various bits and pieces, or somebody has put it together in Photoshop. You know, so that feeds into it. So, but I'm not very... And say in my book, I'm not heavy on stuff. I like the light-hearted approach to it all. If things happen, they happen. You know, if it didn't happen, it didn't happen. It doesn't make any difference to my existence on this planet. If it's flat, I've still got air to breathe. if it's around. Yeah, you know, you have to step back from all these conspiracies, and you have to step back from all and go, well, you know, does it really make a lot of difference if it's flat around? Doesn't to me. Did they go to the moon? Doesn't make a lot of difference, you know.
No, yeah, you are right. I think like one of the major points is that if they've lied about that, what else are they going to lie about? I think that's one of the main things people are going on about. But you are right. We've still got Earth. We've still got air to breathe. We've like still got the wildlife. We can still do what we want, regardless of if it's flat or round. But it'd be interesting to see what's be over the ice walls, so to speak, that's keeping the edge of the flat Earth.
Yes, the ice wall. Well, that's the other thing about aircraft, isn't it? That nobody has ever flown around the equator. If you look into, you know, they say, well, we've flown around the world. When they talk about flying around the world, they don't talk about going to the equator and flying around the world. Now, to me, if you were going to fly around the world, we need to go where it's its widest, because the Earth is a geode, isn't it? It's not really round or spherical.
No,
it's a geoid shape. Not a geode. A geode is something completely different. That's a rock that you have to break open and get lots of crystals inside. A geoid. A geoid shape. So it's not quite round. It's bulbous in the middle. So if you were going to fly around the Earth, this is what you do. You'd go to the equator and go, well, I'm going to fly all the way around. And nobody's done that. But you just think, oh, well, they've gone around the world. But it's because of the shape of the planet. Well, I don't know. It's... there's so many conspiracies out there. It's easy to get sucked in with stuff. But I think if you take it too seriously, you know, I mean, you've got David Icke. He's a great one. I don't know if you listen to any of his stuff. David Icke.
I had one of his books. I've been aware of David Icke when I was at school. I mean, I'm 41 now, so I was aware of David Icke back when I was at school with the lizard people. And I've had a few interesting people on my podcast. I've had Sam Tripoli on. I don't know if you've heard of Sam Tripoli. He does a conspiracy podcast.
Right.
And I told him about the Queen of England can't enter the city of London without permission. They've still got to go through a some sort of ritual where she's handed a dagger, and this is at Temple Bar, and all the boundaries around the city of London, because the city of London's a city within London with its own ruling and things like that. And all the boundary markers are like dragons. Temple Bar, obviously, has got the big dragon thing, and they do some sort of ritual there where she's passed over a dagger, and they've got to do that. So she can't enter the city of London before. But going back to the lizard people, yeah, David Icke, I'm like aware of David Icke and his 5G on London Real, yeah.
Yeah, no, his is the moon's hollow, isn't it, with him? The moon's hollow and it's got a bell inside of it or something. So I don't know. But it's all quite interesting stuff. If you take it with a pinch of salt, then you go, well, yes, okay. So I've always been interested in conspiracies. I think it probably started with watching movies like JFK.
You know,
remember the Oliver Stone movie, JFK, with Kevin Costner?
Yeah, brilliant movie, yeah.
Absolutely fabulous movie, you know, and that goes into great detail about the assassination, but also brings
the
up
magic
a lot of
bullet.
Hypothesis.
The magic bullet. Where
well, the it, magic bullet. I mean, it's great how many injuries they all got from one bullet.
And like
it's all this grass null stuff that, I mean, I refer to Lee Harvey Oswald as Lee Hardly Good Shot in the book.
I mean, he's got a backstory of his own, hasn't he? Where, like, he wasn't supposed to be a very good shot, but then the angle of the shot was supposed to be quite difficult to do. So.
Yes. And quite a poor rifle as well. You know, just one of these box standard rifles, a bolt action rifle, which, yeah. I mean, apart from using guns in video games, I've not really handled any live. But a bolt action gun is quite a slow thing to use, you know. I mean, you got to push the bullet into the thing, pull the bolt back, click it round, and then try and aim. And he didn't have scope, you know, he just had sights to look down. So
it's not like you're hitting the target, you're hitting the President of the United States, so you've got to be pretty cool. So I mean, was he CIA, and the CIA used him and they thought they'll just off him after he did it, who knows?
Yeah, well, he had all this KGB Russian thing, wasn't he? Because he was back and forth from Russia as well.
Yeah.
So you had that Russian side to him. But no, I found all that.
And they probably used MK Ultra on him anyway. He was probably one of the subjects, like, from MK Ultra.
That's right. That was all for the Manchurian Candidate stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Funny we should mention MK Ultra, because I was watching Shutter Island, and like I thought, this is just like MK Ultra. Because Leonardo DiCaprio was some sort of hitman, and he went to kill the Nazis. So, you know, right. Did he know too much? Then went to Shutter Island, where they experimented on people. Shutter Island was set in 1954, and MK Ultra was given the go-ahead in 1953. So, I did a bit of research on that, because it all just sort of clicked into place. But yeah, anyway, that's going off the beaten track.
I remember the sort of Manchurian Candidate kind of stuff, which was, you know, originally was a Frank Sinatra movie.
Well, he was blodgy anyway, wasn't he? He like was in with a mafia and everyone.
It was remade in the 90s with Denzel Washington. That's right.
Right, cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's still called The Manchurian Candidate. That's a very good movie. Same thing, you know, brainwashing, you know, just brainwashing people. But there's been lots of stuff. There was this whole thing, wasn't that French thing? I think it was in the 60s where they poisoned all the bread in a French village.
Oh, no, I never knew that one.
Well, it was all LSD stuff. They were putting LSD in the bread in the bakery. And, you know, all the people of the town went all a bit loopy. I mean, this is a story. I mean, I do touch on this in Downfall, the book that's coming on. So, I mean, I've looked up quite a few different conspiracies and stuff, and I touch on, sometimes I spell out what things are immediately, and other times I despise them as something else. So depending on mood, and I think, and topics that you want to touch on, you think, well, that's a bit naughty, but I do like the conspiracies of the 20th century, but as long as it's amusing. Yeah, so we were saying how I got into writing that style of book.
Yeah, sorry.
That's where the question started off.
I know, yeah, we'll like, go back to the book. Yeah, the style of writing is, it's, and it sucks you in, and it puts you there, and it makes you feel like you're friends with them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, they're very likable characters. I mean, the thing is, although they do, and you get to learn a lot more about Dmitri and Yuri and who they are and where they've come from. I mean, Yuri makes an astounding confession when they're outside of the space station going to try and fix this camera with the black card, the elliptical black card.
Basically, he hasn't got a clue, has he?
No, he's out there, and he says he's left his glasses behind. You know, he wears contact lenses. He makes a lot of confessions, and then says, you know, that he's really not who he says he is.
Yeah,
you know, he's an imposter.
That was brilliant. Where he like said, well, he was on the train, and he fishbone and that, and like sort of Dimitri says, I've known you for like 12 years. And I've just found this out.
Well, that's another thing about, another theme was relationships. Now, how well do we know the people that we work with? Now, you've got to think, if you're an environment where you work with people, you have a very different relationship with them than you do with family members and partners and wives and everything.
Of course, right.
It's more of a smiley face, hiya, Joe, how you doing, how's life treating you kind of thing. More of a, you know, just a very general conversation type thing. And if you work with people, it's only you're obviously at work, so you don't spend all of your time with these people. So you think with the likes of some sort of group like NASA and stuff, or in this case, Dmitri and Yuri in Russia, you know, mission control and space programs, that these would be people that know each other, but probably don't spend every waking moment together.
Yeah.
So it was that kind of thing. So it was them realizing through conversation that they didn't really know one another. You know, they thought they knew one another, but
turns out there was that.
Yeah, that was the theme. So addiction obviously is another theme that I dealt with in the book, although it's lighthearted because, I mean, you know, you find out that Dmitri really is a drunk.
Mm. No, yeah, he does like his whiskey, doesn't he?
You know, stuff. Well, the whole thing you find out about, I'm giving things away, about the green box that he has all the time, you know, his fishing box. Another right. thing, stupid thing. Somebody takes fishing flies and yeah. and a book on fishing into space. You know, what's the point? You know, what is the point of that?
And that was there a specific reason why you used Russians and not English or American or Chinese or Japanese? Was there a reason why you used Russians?
Yes.
Or is it because it's just a bit more comical when it comes from like Russia? Well, Russia's meant to be a hard country. They're hard people. They are hard people because it's a hard country. They've had different cultures and different upbringings to us, especially in the 80s with like the communism and that. So did you use it so it's such a serious sort of country, but make it a bit lighthearted and a bit more comical?
Well, what I think about, what I like about the communist way of life, I mean, if you take it from its basic principles, is that they want everyone to have the same.
Yeah.
That's what really communism is at its heart. Unlike capitalism, where, you know, well, I'm going to crush you to get everything that I want. Communism is like, well, let's all be a band of brothers together, you know, and we'll struggle through all of this.
That didn't work because, like, you always get one.
Now, when I was growing up, you had the idea of Russia through the television, for the media, that they queued for things. They queued for toilet roll. They queued for food. You know, it was like the supermarkets, you know. So it was harping back to that sort of idea where that I liked that. These were a tough, as you say, they were tough. They had to be tough because if you think of the climate in Russia, a lot of Russia, it's very cold. So you think, well, this is going to be vodka to get you through, you know. So vodka will help. You know, drink a bit of vodka and we will get through hard problem. So it was just because every problem was dealt with a sip of alcohol or cigarette. So I like the fact that, because I was doing the food thing with that they were struggling with food, there was a food equality, I thought, well, queuing for things. And I thought, well, that's sort of harping back to that period, you know, in Russia, in that sort of 60s to 80s period, where so I like that through. I don't know if you've seen a few films. There's a film called Sex Mission, which is actually a Polish film. It was made in the 80s. It's a science fiction comedy. That's a really, really good film. If you haven't seen it, I suggest. The English version is called Sex Mission. There's another Russian film, which is a science fiction comedy, called King Zaza. Now, I don't know if you've heard of that or seen that. That's another Russian film. It's wacky. It's wacky, you know. That's really sort of out there. But these are 80s films. But, I mean, so I don't know, answering your question, I've always done impersonations and stuff like that, so I don't know. I just thought the Russian was a great way to do comedy. And I just thought, sit in front of computer, I can do voice to myself, and able to write in style of Russian. So that's what I'm doing when I'm writing this book. So I don't know, it's... The Americans I deliberately left out, apart from Hank. Hank is an ex-football player, six foot four guy who's pretty dumb.
I was just about to say he's dumb.
You know, this is some guy that's pinning the tail on the donkey, you know, and dressing up in a swimming costume,
splashing his face with water. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so. These are all things, I don't know, they're all situations that, well, this is stupid. These things aren't going to happen. But the Americans, I have to say, it's a deliberate thing, because we're brought up, especially on this popcorn bubblegum chewing society that we have in Britain now, that everything really floods over from America, all the movies, doesn't it? If you want to watch a movie, you want a big blockbuster American-style movie, because they've got the big production, they've got the big bucks. So there's all that influence, and there's also that world power thing. Now, I wanted to shift the world power. Right at the start, I say that America have teamed up with China, you know, so they are allies, and really Britain and Russia are allies. So because later on through the other books, there's a strong a strong influence of Britishness throughout the Russian Empire, if you like. So, and I also wanted to sort of say, there's the Americans, and took them out of the picture entirely. So I thought it would have a different feel if the characters were American. I mean, always you think about astronauts, you think about NASA, and I think all that kind of has been done, but you never really think about cosmonauts too much. You know, apart from the time period in the 60s with the other Uri Geller, was it? I think Uri Geller? I always get confused. One bent spoons and one went to space.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Gagarin. It's Uri Gagarin went to space and Uri Geller
bent spoons.
Yeah, so I like all that Russian stuff. I like watching that kind of film. And I quite like continental movies as well, that sort of European feel. I've always liked kind of French films and Japanese movies and stuff. They have a different flavour to American blockbuster type stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I know what I've written is it's off the wall. But, you know, comedy is such a strange thing. Where somebody might think, oh, I really like that programme, but I think, no, it doesn't do much for me. So it's difficult. But my comedy comes from Laurel and Hardy. I mean, right. to me, the premise for that is Laurel and Hardy in space. You know, you've got these two people that are in a situation that sort of know what they're doing, but don't know what they're doing. And they've got their own ideas about what they want to do.
Winging it.
Yeah, they're winging it. They've got their own ideas about what they want to do. So, I mean, my comedy comes from that. It comes from Will Hay, George Formby, turned out Nash again,
yeah.
You know, all that kind of stuff. Ealing comedies, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's all sort of going through the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, you know.
On the buses.
On the buses. I mean, that's a really old one, isn't it?
Yeah. Brilliant, though. It's still good. It's just light-hearted, easy watching, fun. It's not nasty. There's like no problems. It just takes you out of the bullshit what's happening at the minute. And it's you know, it just puts you into a different sense of happiness.
Well, the other thing that I gave myself challenge-wise, that when I was writing the books, that is that I wanted really basically no profanity,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted no sex. So if somebody's looking for lots of swear words on a hot steamy thing to read, this is definitely not it.
I didn't even notice. I was too intrigued. Just like it was just too intrigued. Well,
It's very easy in comedy now that you notice even with the, you know, big performers on stage, they swear an awful lot.
Yeah.
There's not really any joke there. It's just them effing and jeffing all the time and the audience laughing to it. And that kind of leaves me flat. So that I made it. I thought I want to do a slapstick comedy and science fiction thing. So it's Laurel and Hardy in space. Keep it clean. Keep it clever.
Yeah.
And deal with lots of, I mean, okay, there's lots of stuff I deal with, life and death. It's touched on because they have a conversation about, you know, the overseers, which Dimitri explains to him, an alien race of people that are immortal.
Yeah, where he explains it to Yuri.
Where he explains, Yuri grasps some of it as always, you know.
I don't think he always listens. I think he's thinking of something else or doing something else while Dimitri's trying to be serious to him. And like Yuri comes out with like a silly comment at the end and compares it to something that's got nothing to do with it. And I think that's part of his charm. They're both lovable characters and there's no bad in them, but one's more serious than the other. And that's Dimitri's more serious than Yuri.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, if you think, Dimitri is the Ollie and Yuri is the Stan Laurel.
Yeah.
If you look at them like that, you know, Yuri is the standard. Even in Stan Laurel's time, you know, if Laurel and Hardy moved, he had moments of inspiration, you know, where he was dumb most of the time. But then all of a sudden he came across as being very intelligent.
Mm.
You know, so it's that kind of idea. I mean, I suppose my comedy, that would hail from, I don't know, this, I've always liked Woody Allen, you know, Woody Allen movies.
Yeah.
I've always liked that. I always grew up with that kind of stuff, which is a different kind of comedy. This is a very, very wordy, very heavy on the dialogue, but always dealt with relationships. Very sexually orientated. Different kind of comedy. I liked that. And then moving on to science fiction stuff, I loved all the Charlton Heston stuff in the 70s. When you're growing up watching all that, you know, the Soylent Green, the Amiga Man, all those kind of films, Planet of the Apes.
Right.
They were all great science fiction stuff. I mean, all that kind of stuff's dated now, isn't it? But at the time when you watched it, and then I liked all the work, you've got people like Terry Gilliam that did films like Brazil in the 80s, Fish King, you know, all those sorts of films. They were great. And Life of Brian, Monty Python.
Obviously, yeah. Funniest scene in any film is the big nose scene in the Life of Brian, right at the beginning, where Jesus is talking and... Yeah. Who with you, Goliath's big brother?
I've got a very good friend in Rome called Biggest Diggus.
That's so funny, that scene. And he's got a wife, you know. And all the centurions are trying not to laugh, and at the end they just all break down, like, crying with laughter.
So, I mean, I think all that kind of comedy stuff, it was that's great. So, I mean, we all have influences throughout our life, don't we, sir?
Yes.
So you said right at the start about Red Dwarf. I remember watching Red Dwarf and thinking it was great, you know. I liked all the Star Trek stuff, but back in my day when you watched television, we only had three channels, which it was. Up here, because I live in Scotland, you couldn't even get Channel 4. You know, when Channel 4 came out, it was that way.
Really? You
didn't get it. I mean, even up here with the BBC One, BBC Two, and ITV, it was really you watching a snowy picture.
Wow.
The signal wasn't great, but I think that's what made it magical. I mean, when I grew up, I thought all of the modern actors were people like Cary Grant and David Niven and John Wayne. It's only when you get older you realise they died a long time ago, and people do have colour television as opposed to black and white. But I mean, I think it's that distance that you have. I think it made it magical. Where the picture wasn't quite clear, it made the magic even more real because they were further away from you. They were unobtainable. Whereas today, that whole celebrity thing's completely changed. Everyone can be a celebrity, you know, and it's very immediate now, isn't it? You know, they want to know what's your next film, what's your next thing. It's all very immediate. What's happening right now? You know, which is not great for somebody like me. I mean, you know, when you contacted me about this, I didn't have Skype. I had to install Skype for myself.
I know, yeah. And like, I was, I'm quite jealous of you when you said you're not really a social butterfly, because I've been thinking of not getting rid of it, but not having my smartphone with me all the time and going back to getting a pager. There was someone selling one on eBay, and I said, does it still actually work? Are there still operators? And he goes, yeah. And I said, is there any contracts? He says, no, the people who call or do the thing pay. So I might go back to the old pager system, because I think technology is going to be humanity's downfall. I don't think it's going to be good for us, but I don't think there's nothing we can do, because it's implemented so much. We've got, and like, they've made it in such a way, we've got to use technology, and if we don't, we're going to be the outcasts of society. Because, and the same goes with businesses. Yeah. Businesses don't follow suit, being a cashless society or things like that, they're going to get left behind. So you've got no choice to get into technology, and the rate that technology is moving, it's such a fast rate, it's just going to dwarf our lives. And we're like, some people are sucked in, and me for one, I'm so addicted to my phone, and I know I am, and I don't really want to be, because I'm just serving a useless purpose. I'm like not getting a goal from life. I'm like living life. through other people. And I remember the times where I had to have 10p or 20p because I'm 41. So I'm pleased I grew up into a way where they didn't have the internet. I mean, I had my first mobile phone when I was about 18, and I thought it was magical that I could see the number calling on the screen. But before then, I had to go to the post office. Post office for a phone card, 10p in my pocket if I wanted to call someone up, or they would call me at home. If I wanted information, I'd have to go to the library or buy a book. I'd have to go to Smith's. I couldn't just go on Amazon. I couldn't ask Wikipedia. Can you remember Quantum Leap? I now had that handheld thing called Ziggy. That's basically iPhone or a phone now. You can ask anything, and within seconds, you've got an answer.
I'm slightly older.
Crazy.
I'm 49, so I'm a wee bit older than yourself. I've got almost a decade before yourself. And I'm not a phone person. I've got a mobile phone, and I have it out of necessity for if I break down in the car, I don't want to be knocking on someone's door saying, "Can I use your phone?"
Which you could have a new book from that.
Right, which happened to me. I mean, I remember breaking down. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. I don't know where I'd been. I think I'd been to college that day. It was a long time ago, and I'd been at a friend's house, and I'd come home, and it'd taken forever to get home. And it was 2 o'clock in the morning, and I was driving home, and one of the water hoses came off the car. And I thought, oh, no. 2 o'clock in the morning. There was no such thing as road rescue or any of that kind of stuff then. Mm. And I thought, what am I going to do? And there was a farmhouse. I thought, well, the hose has come off. So I had a screwdriver. I put the hose back on, but I didn't have any water. So I went and knocked on this guy's door at 2 o'clock in the morning. Because that's really all you could do.
Of course it was, yeah.
Car the whole night. You know, so I knocked on it. And the guy was not impressed that I knocked on this door, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning. Because most people get what we call up here, a fleg, a scare.
All right. I've never heard of that saying. It's interesting because I think you're about the 93rd or 94th podcast, and I find it interesting. I've always found it interesting, different little words for different things from different parts of the world and different parts of the country.
But in Scotland, they would say you got an Arthur flag. I got an Arthur flag, okay, which is a scare. It's a scare. You got scared. And I remember the guy saying to me, oh, there's a water tap over there, because it was on a farm. Go and use it. But he was very irate, and I thought, I broke down quite a few times in my younger days. But so a mobile phone for that. I mean, this is how bad it is. I put £20 into my mobile phone a year.
Mm-hmm.
I have a pay as you go. £20, it does me. I mean, you even said to me, if I got Instagram, and I wasn't quite sure what it was. This is somebody that's writing South Asia, by the way. I'd heard of it. To me, a lot of social media, with no disrespect to females in any way here at all, of course, but I find that social media is really what you call a wifey thing up here.
Right.
For women. Yeah, it's true. Women, you know, like this, the Jack Jones song, they love to chat about the dresses they will wear tonight. Women love to talk, you know, they love to chat. They love to be involved, whereas I don't know, men. I don't know. Maybe it's different now. I don't know. It's that I don't need to be telling everyone my business all the time. Unfortunately for me, it seems I come across as being a very standoffish, because I have a Facebook account and people will send me links to things and do things, you know. But I only turn it on once every 2 weeks or something.
Yeah.
So, and it's like if you text me. You texted me, and I think it took me a week before I actually looked at my phone. I hadn't looked at my phone for a week.
I know. Sorry about the random text.
Somebody's saying about a podcast, and I thought, that sounds interesting. I thought, when did he text me? I thought, well, he texted me 3 times. And to a lot of people, I think, well, this person, they probably say, this person doesn't want to know. So I don't know. So I've been able to stand back from it. It could be an age thing. I know people that are older than me don't get into computers and don't go like that. I mean, but I've always been into technology. I mean, I was one of the first people to have a digital phone. A camera, a digital camera. I mean, they came out sort of 2000s, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Sort of 2000s and digital cameras. And I just got into becoming an advertising manager for a local magazine back in 2000. And that was terrific because I was able to go into premises with a digital camera, you know, and take photographs. People would say, well, I don't have anything, nothing here to advertise. It's all right. I'll take photographs. I'll write you up a bit of blurb and do it. And it was great. That revolutionized the business. But back then, people didn't know what JPEG files were, what TIFF files were. You know, emails were really just terribly slow. We were all on dial-up. Dial-up. I don't know if you remember dial-up.
Yeah, I can. And then it nearly got to the end, then it just stopped.
And you finally get on. Then you couldn't use your phone if you were using the internet.
No, yeah,
there was no way of separating it. So if somebody was on their computer, nobody could phone you. Mobile phones really hadn't taken off. I mean, things have changed an awful lot in the last 20 years.
Oh, it's grown massively. I mean, if Mike, if you think about, I do want to do a podcast all about technology and like the rate it's moving. But if you go back to the 1980s or 1978, something like that, and like you had the all Atari Pong game where you just had a thing wired in and it was a dial. But if you think about that now compared to what we have now, yeah, it's about 41 years, say, but it's not a vast amount of time compared to what it was back then. To compare the rate of technology growing now, it's fantastic. I mean, like, I've got a like sort of like a VR thing I got with like one of my phones, and like you put that on and you basically take into another realm, you take into another dimension, and it's so crazy because like you're actually there, you like look up, it's a different sky, you look around, it's different scenery, and it's quite scary. And I think maybe in 30 years we'll all be plugged into some sort of network system where we don't want to leave the houses, and with what's going on at the minute, it's like people are getting used to not leaving their houses and relying on technology. I do accept technology has its merits, but at the end of the day, I think it'll be the downfall. And
I find it intrusive. It's mainly because I think it, depending what you like, I'm quite a creative person. I have been all my life. I mean, before I got into writing these books the last few years, I've always written music. I've always written songs. So I've done that for years. That's been my creative outlet. And then of course, because I became a graphic designer and designing advertising all the time, that took up a large percentage of my life, just constantly sitting at a computer designing stuff. So, but it's also a creative outlet, you know. Yeah. So I think you need to have time to breathe to be creative. It's like I will walk the dog an hour a day. So but that's a great space. Now, if I was listening to my phone or some music or an audio file or something like that, or talking to somebody or texting somebody, there's no breathing space to create. I like to have a problem where I think about, well, what's going to happen. So if I'm writing, whether it's a song lyric or a book or anything like that, where you think you're able to then take that hour and go work on that solution. It's like, what's the importance? Like when I write, I mean, there's a few things. Know the ending of your story before you start.
Mm-hmm.
End of a scene. So you're working to a destination. So if I have a scene, is it advancing the plot? Although there's lots of drivel in between, right? The scene is always advancing the plot. There's always something within every single scene that I write that advances the story along. Okay, you might not see that so much in the first book because it's really just setting the scene.
Yeah.
It's really telling you who the characters are,
it's laying the foundation, yeah.
And the other theme is, with Yuri and Dimitri, basically, they're traveling through a series of unfortunate events.
That's what happens to them. Yeah.
They get into one predicament after another, and it's their own actions or inactions that cause the multitude of their problems. But outside influences, they're also as well. I mean, because at the end of the first book, obviously, the space station semi-explodes. And you only find out the real reason behind all of that when they go back into the space station in the second book.
Right.
It starts to unfold, doesn't it? Straight away. Well, what happened? Why did this happen?
No, it's basically a continuation. It's like not 3 hours later, not 7 days later. It continues afterwards. Well,
the nine books take place over, I think, about 10 to 11 days. But then they is the time period. Maybe less than 2 weeks. Maybe 2 weeks. There's the whole nine books. And I've kept it. And you end up in a real timeline situation. So every scene's working. If I go into a new scene, it's telling you that it's 15 minutes later or something. But I mean, obviously, in the third book, they're back on Earth. So the story is great because it opens up. I mean, when you're in space, you're restricted to what you can do.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, I thought the first two books, this is a great thing. You're restricted. One of the main problems they have is being able to breathe all the time. And, you know, can we get oxygen? If you don't have oxygen in space, you're dead.
Yeah.
You know, that's a problem. So you can have sets of problems in space that you don't have on Earth. You know, which is very useful. And you can use that to your advantage. But then you get back to Earth, you think, well, you've turned it all around. And I thought, first of all, this was going to be a problem because they don't have the disadvantages that they have when they're in outer space. But then when you get back to Earth, you instantly realize, you think, well, you've got much more scope on a planet where people can actually freely walk around and do things.
Yeah, so, not so restricted, are you? Yeah, definitely.
Well, they're set on a huge adventure. As soon as they return to Earth, I mean, obviously, maybe you shouldn't say anything because if you haven't finished the,
I was going to say, yeah.
I had to have a quick read through this morning. I was thinking, I get confused now with what stories in which book.
I just think that's happens to everyone because I was going to ask you. You're going to make them all into one book eventually, so you just buy it all as a big.
I mean, for the likes of doing e-books, that's the word I'm looking for, a technical term there, e-books, yeah, there's no problem, because e-books are just a continuous scroll of information.
Yeah.
So you could technically put it all into one massive, long e-book, but... I think because of the style of the book, because I want to produce a paperback, cost is the other thing. Now, it becomes prohibitive cost-wise if you put all that. I mean, you couldn't possibly print it because the other books, I say, we've got, it's like 700 pages for Downfall, about 700 pages for Uprising. And well, I've got a working title for the last book, which is Escape from Planet Earth. But that's just a working title. So I
like nine books. It you're doing no more books, and it's going to be nine books and finito.
Nine books, like story, but nine books is quite hard to write. I didn't realize that there was quite a lot into it. I mean, obviously these are self-published.
Mm-hmm.
These self-published. I looked and studied all of the ways to publish stuff. And that's quite modern to be self-published, isn't it? And just as well just now, because you can't go to a bookstore anyway.
So
I wanted to be online. I wanted to have a paperback version. And hopefully I will do an audio version of the first book. So
that'd be really good. Because on my podcast, I've done three or four... it's called The Place That Does Not Exist. And it's like only 2 to 5 minutes each and like episode. But I like wanted to do like sort of like a sci-fi series. And I've started writing it. And I found it's a lot harder than it looks. It's, I had to write the script and I went by the script that I wrote. And then I had to add the sound effects in. Then I had to do the editing. Even though the podcast in general is a free speech, unedited podcast. For that, I thought I'd give it a go. But yeah, I that's really interesting. Wouldn't like you do it as like a play, like a radio play, or would you just do it as a one spoken with the accents, obviously?
Well, yes. I mean, the problem I thought about it was, it's because it would have been fine if one was Australian and one was Russian, because you could have Dimitri going, yeah, in my younger days, I was a pamphleteer. Right? So then you've got Yuri going, I remember lots of deaths and people jumping off tall buildings. But then I thought, I've now got to come up with two different tones of Russian. So yeah, it'd have to be, Dimitri would have to be slightly, I think Dimitri's slightly slower but older, so he's, in my younger days I was pamphleteer for the government. And Yuri, I always thought, he's a bit singier. Yuri is a bit, I remember lots of deaths and people jumping off of tall buildings after he had eaten their supplement. So Yuri's a bit more, a bit higher, but I think reading it myself would be difficult. I did think, well, if I could find somebody that could do a Russian accent, or possibly was Russian who could speak English, I could do it with them. But I definitely would put, you know, you've got Dimitri finishes his soup and places the bowl on the table. So rather than saying that, you want to add that sound effect, don't you? You want to, so it's just a sound that comes across.
Yeah, so,
he runs through his suitcase quite a lot in the beginning, doesn't he? He's pulling out frying pans and gas burners and...
it's Mary Poppins' bag.
You know, looking for his cashew sausages and looking for all these stuff, you know. So he's looking for all that. So you need to put all those effects in. So I have thought about it. It's definitely something that's going to happen. Definitely
do it, but the only problem is you're gonna have to do the rest of them, because people will think they will want more if you do it in a radio show format like that.
The whole thing is,
that'd be brilliant.
Well, the whole thing is to try and get sales of a book, isn't it? That's the whole thing, is to try and get sales. I mean, obviously, if I can get this series to take off and pick up, you've then got money to go into some place and get things done. Because you can pay other people to do stuff. I mean, I'd like to do if I was to do something, I'd like to do it in some sort of studio setting where I was maybe Yuri or Dimitri, but not both of them.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot of time. I find the intonation and the language a little bit different between Dimitri and Yuri, and I would have to concentrate on that one person. Jumping accents is fine if they're distant. But I think if you were doing the Russian accent, you could end up speaking like it's just the same person speaking all the time. Yeah. That was my fear, and an early criticism from the wife.
Well, no, yeah, it's any criticism is very good criticism, so to speak.
Well, I just thought, if you're reading the back page, I don't know what the back page here was, you know, I mean, and then you've got 250 miles above the Earth, the International Space Station watches over our planet with its purblind eyes. I mean, does one go into Richard Burton?
Yeah.
You know, it is definitely something I want to do at the moment, because it became overwhelming. As I say, I handed out the first book to friends and family, and I got really positive responses to it. And also to people that I don't really know, you know, that I know them some... socializing, but I'm not friends with them. And I said, you know, if you think it's crap, just tell me it's crap. But I never had any negative responses to it all. They all got into it and found it amusing. You know, oddball, like you said. I mean, when you're writing this stuff, you end up getting, if you're not behind what you're writing yourself, it isn't going to work. So you've got to take a leap of faith and go, right, if I'm pushing this boat here, I'm pushing it all the way. So if you go with a hypothesis or an idea, it's making it work really in the real world. You know, is it sensible to take cigarettes into a space station? Probably not. Is it sensible to take a gas burner? You know,
probably not sensible to take whiskey either.
You know, probably not sensible to whiskey, vodka. You find out that even Yuri's taking brandy and stuff, you know. Is it sensible to take a mouse? Probably not.
Boris. Yeah.
So, but it's taking those situations and making them work. And what I think you'll find interesting is when you start reading the books, and because you don't realize what the story is about. Because I said, we've read two books or halfway through the second one. There's so many Easter eggs in the first book that you've just dismissed. You've spoken about a couple, and I thought it's interesting because they're so you can just dismiss the whole thing in the first book, but some of the stuff is more important than you think it is.
Oh, so
you learn.
So
it's like I can say, well, you bought the paperback, didn't you?
Yeah, I've got them from Amazon. Yeah, and I like we'll put your links up on the description so people can get in touch and.
Well, I'll ask. Interesting because you know we don't know one another. What do you think the cover is?
What, of the first book?
Of the first book, what do you think it is?
Let me. I thought it'd be some sort of emblem that's stuck onto their uniforms. That's what I initially thought. But
it's a great idea. It's if you look at it closely, it's Yuri's watch.
Oh, the triangle.
He's got a triangular gold watch. Right, but if you were to get a magnifying glass, you'd look at that watch and you think there's more to this than meets the eye. All of the clues to this book are in that image. Although it's just that all of the covers of the book, even the next one, pertain to something.
That's really clever. That's wow. I'm like
even on the back page. I'll just read you. We've got here. This is on the back page of Downfall, which is the book after, and it's little clues I like to give, a little tagline. Sweet Sicily tea with honey is an awfully nice treat. Just beware of bowls of soup that you maybe shouldn't eat.
All right.
When you read this, you don't know what that means. Same with the next book. I've got the tagline on the back is, a frog mask can be lots of fun to wear if a nosy crescent moon didn't care. So all of this stuff, when you read it on the back of the book, and it's the same with Beyond the Dome and Beneath the Dome. There's an Easter egg throughout it. Now, I'll give you an Easter egg. All right. Now, he talked about an author that's writing about conspiracy theories in the 20th century. Can you remember what that author's name is in the story?
No.
Yuri picked up a book. Dmitri says to him, at least you didn't use it to prop the table up. He's sitting reading, I don't know if you remember the scene, Yuri's sitting reading a book on conspiracies of the 20th century, and he starts asking about the Apollo moon landing. And he says to him, what, we didn't go to the moon?
Yeah.
Dmitri, exasperated, he says, you know we didn't go, we've got a dome around the planet, how could we go to the moon? So, and then Dmitri says, I wonder where that book had got to, and at least you're not using it to prop up the table leg, you know. So, and he talks about his cousin who's called Oscar Pacine. Okay. Now, Oscar Pacine is an anagram of conspiracies.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. So I'm like.
There's a Oscar Pacine and it makes the word conspiracies.
The books are all deeper than first perceived then.
There's a lot of stuff going on, but it's like lots of things. There's lots of stuff in there. And there's lots of clues in the first book and the second book. In the first book, I think it's difficult for me now not to give a lot of stuff away. All I can say to you is that Yuri's watch, which is just a stupid little story in that book, is more relevant to what's going on than you could ever believe.
Really? I'm going to have to go back to that scene now and read about that watch.
Well, you won't find out any information. The only fact that the end of it, that he tells you that it wasn't after the whole story about his cousin Nikolai. He says, oh, that's not the watch. This is my father's watch. He gave it to me on my 21st birthday. So you then find out the story behind all that. There's so much. All of the books are in the same vein where there's lots and lots of different stories. Yuri telling a story, Dmitri telling a story. And obviously, because they're back on Earth, there's a lot more characters.
Yeah.
You've got the whole thing opens up and you get a lot more characters. It's ends up being set on two planets. There's a lot that happens, and it becomes up to date. Right. I don't know if there's a question there. Was there? Did I answer it?
No. The initial question was where you're going to go from like the nine books, then you got into the sort of doing it as a like a radio place or like sort of thing, and it went from there.
Yeah, well, the ninth book, I finished it. I finished the story, and I had about three or four different endings for the story where you could leave it open ended if you want to. Again, but I actually went for one that finished the story.
Oh, cool. And it was,
sorry?
I said cool.
So it finished the story, and I thought, yes, it ties it all up. I mean, like a lot of things, you're winding your way back to the start of things that happened. I hope I've tied everything up. I mean, when I handed that second book, I gave it to people and said, oh, it was excellent, but what happens to so-and-so? What do they do now? What did that bit mean? And I got all these questions afterwards. Then I went for a walk and with a dog. And as I was walking through the woods, I was thinking, you know, I could write another book. I could cover this. And then I thought, well, what other conspiracies can I get into? Because with this one, I deal with Sputnik,
mm-hmm.
you know, I call Spudnik.
Spudnik, yeah.
The Spudnik, because the farmer finds it in these potato drills, doesn't he? So that's that one. I deal with the claw sharks, which is really, I don't know if you've heard of the harp, which is a harp is...
They're testing on the...
It's yes. a high frequency active auroral research program based in Alaska.
Weather control. It's a
weather control. And that's what. That's HARP, which is AARP.
RP, yeah, it's double A in the middle.
It's Clasarcs, which is a Scottish HARP.
Right.
So the anagram for my one, I'm going to look this up. Which is Clasarcs, and I call it the Cammackmore Land Antenna for Reducing Severe Anomalous Climatic Hemisphere Stresses. That took me a long time to come up with that, because I thought, well, and the thing behind that is because a Clasarcs is a Scottish harp. That's the link.
So where you've got
the other thing's called harp with a double A. So that was being a little bit clever, but it so lots of ideas
and lots of research going into it with like modern day conspiracies as well.
Yeah, I sort of the great thing now. I mean, talking about advanced in civilization, the technology is the internet. If you use the internet wisely, it's a fantastic tool. It's like I mean, I can imagine the wife has said last few months the KGB is going to be knocking on the door in a minute. Because of what I've been researching, you know, I'm constantly on a Russian map. I'm constantly on Google Earth in Russia, studying military installations and where the train timetables, you know, and what kind of weaponry the Russians used in the 60s, what kind of military vehicles they used in the 60s and the 80s. You're typing in words like bomb and how to make a bomb, you know. And it's amazing what kind of stuff you start researching into.
Funny you should say that about Russian. Just going back to the series I did, The Place That Doesn't Exist, I've put underneath when I'm like speaking, I've like done all my voice different, but like in the background there's the Russian number station, the buzzer. So I don't know if you're aware, I'm sure you've come across the buzzer somewhere on like your research about Russia. They've got their number station, it's called the buzz, and it just buzzes on its own. Burr, burr,
right.
Burr. And it goes like that. No one knows what it's for. They're there speaking over it. They think it might be a dead man switch for like sort of some reason. They did find out where it was, then it moved, and then it's still going. It's called UVB something, I think. And you can just get a shortwave radio, you can tune in to it, and you will hear a buzzing that's continuous. No one knows what it's there for, and that comes from Russia, and it's called the buzzer. So there.
Right. No, it's been an writing the last 2 years has been an education. Really has, because you start to look up historical facts and you think, you all of a sudden there's a story that Yuri relates about his great-great-grandfather I can't remember which one it's in now. I think it could be an uprising. I'm not sure. But it led me to find out when dynamite first came on the go, and the fact that they used to make it from initially of the sort of fake dynamite, was they used bat guano. You
know, right.
So it's very interesting when you start some of the historical fact. I think factual stuff could be more amusing than actual fiction. So you start doing a wee bit of research into that. You think, oh, that's interesting. That's funny. And I'm going to do this. And so there are, if you enjoyed all those little side stories about, I don't know, Yuri's uncle being a magician and all these sorts of wacky stuff, you know, a great, great uncle, you know, other characters are coming back. You've got the prime minister, you know, Count Kosky.
Right.
Obviously his name Count Kosky, and then there's a whole thing about the fact that when he was a kid at school he couldn't bring up his phlegm and cough and all the rest of it, you know. The clues are lots of names. You've got, he tells a story about his art teacher, doesn't he, and I think the second one, Mrs. Karkrashnia.
Right. Well,
you know, as soon as you read the name Karkrashnia, what happens to her? She crashes her car, doesn't she, in the group of nuns. So there's a lot. I think I've got a Mrs. de Kapanowski. Well, you can imagine what's going to happen to her.
Yeah.
So there's a few little silly things where you just thought the clue's in the name. But yeah, the Prime Minister is going to be quite a major role in the books that come.
Oh,
you're going to learn who he is. There's lots of characters that haven't come into the story yet. You're going to find out who the people were behind the... There's a scene where Dmitri and Yuri are playing Scrabble. I don't know if you remember that scene. No. Or you even got that copy yet. Maybe you didn't go that far. It's in the second book where Dmitri's first word is jumbuck anyway. But there's a scene, well, if you haven't got that far on, that you're going to find out that the voices on the radio that come on, later on you find out who they are. You find out lots of stuff. So I kind of give it to the reader piecemeal. There's lots of distractions. I don't know if you ever watched Billy Connolly when he used to do his stand-up stuff, like Albert Hall concerts and stuff like that.
I've seen a few, but nothing to go to say I can distinctly remember that part.
That period in the 90s, Billy Connolly was very big, and he did a lot of stand-up comedy, and he did stuff at the Albert Hall. And his way of delivering comedy was is that he would tell stories, and then he'd start to talk something about something else, and then you would forget about what he was talking about earlier on. And then you'd realize 10 minutes later, this whole thing that he's talking about now is about the other thing that you'd forgotten about.
Yeah.
And it's a very clever mechanism to use in telling a story where you've wandered off into the banal and the reader goes with you. But at the same time, you've distracted them. It's a bit like a magic trick. I think writing is a bit like a magic trick. Misdirection, you know. Yeah. Which coin or where's the ball under the, which one is it under, find the lady, all that kind of stuff. So you're here, I'm taking you here, but I skipped over this bit here just now only to bring this bit back. And I think
you can see what one hand's doing, but you don't know what the other one's doing.
Yeah, I found the process, you know, very interesting. I mean, certainly it's not a style that I sort of copied from anywhere else. As you say, I think maybe the fact that it isn't a play format might put people off. I'm not sure. Could people that read books, maybe they want something. But
that's one thing that did initially put me, I thought, oh no. But then I looked at it and I read it and I thought, doesn't even make a difference. If And if anything, it makes it easier to read and sets it up in the place where you want it to go, I think, because it gives you that scene settings as like, well, scene ends, scene comes up. And I think that's good. And I just think it's a completely different book. It's the like your style of writing again brings the reader in. And I just think that some of the best books I've read in a long, long time.
Well, it's good. It's what it's a good compliment to get, isn't it? It's not the best compliment you can get, isn't it? So no, if I could get more folk to go out and buy the thing, it'd be great. I mean, I'm doing a wee bit of promotion on Amazon at the moment, but
as I say, has the lockdown helped the book sales at all?
Sorry, what was that?
I like I said, has the lockdown helped the book sales at all? Or
no, I mean the problem I had is I launched Beyond the Dome at the end of last year. Then we quickly I wasn't really able to go out and do any launch stuff. I mean, I'm pretty tied at the house these days, through reasons I can't get into. Mm-hmm. I'm not able to go out and be somebody that can put himself about and spread it all around. I mean, we live in a very rural area anyway. When I did the first book, I did do a few book launches. I had, I think, about 10 different places I launched the book, which was fine. But rurally, it's like I think one of them was at a castle. I did a launch at a castle.
Oh, wow.
And I sold five books, but they only had 4 visitors over 2 days.
Oh.
So it became, you know what I mean? I sold more books than there were visitors, so that was a positive thing. But it was coming up towards Easter as well, and I thought, well, this should be really good. And I was right at the door. I thought this would be fine. Some of the places I went to, they were rural and not so great. Some places I went out, I did a bookshop in one of the small towns up here, and I sold to who came through the door, but he had 3 people who came in his shop. You know, this is, we're talking prior to any kind of lockdown. This is what like this kind of area is like. I mean, you don't get a lot of people coming into your shop to buy things, you know, unless you're a supermarket. Yeah. So that's problematic. I mean, I did have a few good days. I had a good day at a place called Formatines, which is a bistro restaurant type place, but it's always packed out with people. And that was very good. A good sunny day. I was able to sit outside. And because of, one of the first things is I set up a website, you know, people were able to sort of have a quick look at the website to see what this guy's doing and selling. And because I was selling for charity as well, it always helps. But the second book, I didn't do anything. I had one launch day in a rural area, and I think it was in an antique shop, so I did that one. And I've not been able to do anything about it. As I said right at the beginning of this interview, that I found the marketing and the promotion side of it a major distraction to my creativity.
Right.
I can understand why, if I could sit here just typing and writing stuff and then have a publisher and have people who do promotion and advertising and all that kind of stuff and push it and do that, you can see why there's other people always involved with things. That would be great, because the marketing side of it is difficult. I mean, it's on Amazon just now. I mean, being, as I said, not a social butterfly, more of an antisocial butterfly, you know, not having a large group of friends and people, not being constantly on Facebook or social media or doing stuff, you're outside of reality these days. I mean, unless you're actually right there pushing stuff all the time. I mean, I don't have a Twitter account. I don't have Instagram. I kind of know what Instagram is now after speaking to you the other day. You know, it's really a free way for people to text one another.
Mm.
I think it's probably why I don't get a lot of texts, is because the fact that somebody texts me, it costs them money.
Yeah.
So I think that was the problem. I thought, he's saying with this Instagram thing. I thought about it afterwards. I thought, I know what it is. It's costing him 20 pence every time. So I kind of thought, oh, that's why people don't text me anymore. You know, I maybe should look into stuff like Instagram and Facebook. I mean, modern technology is fantastic if you use it responsibly.
Definitely it's Instagram. It's a bit like alcohol. Yeah, definitely it's a Instagram. Bit like, oh, sorry, go on. No, go on. Sorry.
Well, I see.
I'd have Instagram, but I just have it for texting. You know, it's I really don't know. I'm not a great one for blowing my own trumpet. I don't mind doing stuff. I am a performer. I'll go out there and perform songs and do all that. I don't mind doing any of that. But actually, me promoting myself is not really who I am. I'm not. I've not got a large ego. I have an ego, but it's not, you know, in your face.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'll put your books on my Instagram, and obviously I'll put your description on your website and your link to Amazon on the podcast, and hopefully that will get more people coming towards your, like, website and hopefully going to Amazon to buy the books, because the books aren't there by any means. The postage is pretty fast. I was waiting for maybe a day to 2 days for both books. The reason
well, I did wonder
the like only downside is the up and coming books that are coming out, you might have to wait for them, and you might be on your seat, like seat edge, wanting them to come out sooner.
Well, the thing is, you don't really want to release 9 books all at once, you know?
No.
Nobody does that. Nobody does that. I mean, okay, the end of the second book, I mean, you could say, you know, well, that's, they've made it back to Earth. Great. You could finish it there. I mean, the second book, you could finish it there. And it's only if you went away and started thinking about it, you'd be going, oh, I wonder what happened there. Oh, what a shame you didn't mention that. And you could think about stuff like that afterwards. But, I mean, the second book could be a conclusion to the whole thing. But, as I said, you haven't really even got into the story yet after the second book.
Wow.
So I just thought, you know, I'm going to do a saga. I did do a wee bit of research about writing stuff, in as much as you're better off to do a series as opposed to a single book. I can see why that is because, you know, you can promote the first couple of books and really give them away for little or nothing. Giving them away, I think, is a bad idea because you're really attracting people that just want free stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can just get a few hundred or a few thousand sold of the first book, just enough to start it rolling. I mean, I could, you know, I can, I think the next one probably going to be July. Probably I'm going to try and get the next 3 books out. Probably July. I'm just finishing off the, I mean, it was only like 3 days ago. I finished the cover for Downfall Part 3.
Right.
Because it was all going back to the blurb on the back. That's a difficult bit to sit down and go, okay, what was this bit about? What was it? How do I write that as a third person? And how do I say something without giving the story away, without too much away? And how do you say stuff that's intriguing? They all wonder what that's about. It's all that, but it's a totally different. To me, that's a different way of writing, and I was a bit overwhelmed by that to start with. To be quite honest, I don't know why. Not the writing of the book. I found that pretty good. I found all the little going to bed at night time with an A4 book and writing notes down all the time. And then every time you come up with a little idea or a little story, a little subplot, and you think, oh, why? What about if his cousin was this person? What about if his uncle did this? And what about his great-great-great-grandfather? Because so you start talking about... It's interesting because it's for... It's using a few premises that have, you know, people that, well, I know a local farmer that, you know, everyone, he's related to everyone. And I find that quite amusing because he'll go into the bigger story about how he's related to that person. And I thought that about Yuri and Dmitri about, you know, there's just a never ending supply of either uncles or cousins.
Yeah. Or aunties, and all links together.
Grandfather. I mean, I don't know if you've read about Yuri's grandfather yet in the second book. Have you come across that?
Not as yet, no.
Chokes in the chicken bone.
No.
You haven't got that yet.
No, don't say anymore.
You've got a lot of good stuff. You haven't even read the second one yet. You've got a lot of good stuff to come in the second one. So, you know, there's heaps of stuff in the second one.
So, because it's nearly 2 hours now for a podcast, this is like better than I thought it like could have been. Apart from hoping to do a radio series about it, are you doing spin-off books with them, or are you just going to leave this series alone and then start another one, or what's your ideas for the future?
ideas for the future, right? Just now is to get all of these books out. This year, realistically, I'm looking at getting the next three books out, which is Downfall.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at getting those out probably July, something like that. Hopefully getting those out. And then I have to look realistically about it probably being next year before the next three come out. If I get to the autumn months and think they went well, but I put a hold on stuff because I need to get sales. There's no point in me putting a load of 9 books out there
if no one's buying them.
Because it costs time, it costs money. Because I'm designing the covers, everything.
Yeah, you know, takes you're doing time.
You're being the publisher. You're doing the promotion.
Well, it's like me with my podcast. It's just me doing it, so I can relate to how hard it can be to like get things ready,
I think once it gets going, and people like yourself, you know, obviously if you read it and you really enjoyed it, that's positive, you know, because you can say to people, well, maybe it's a bit oddball, maybe it's a bit unusual, but please definitely read it. You will like it.
Especially if you know why I like it so much. But I say that's why I like it so much, because I'm an oddball, so.
I don't know. It's very difficult. They always say, don't they, write what you know about. And you think, well, this is kind of like, well, how could anybody know about any of the stuff that I've written? You know, it's because it's all made up. It really is kind of made up, all of it. You know, you think, write what you know about. Well, I've gone total opposite way. Write about something you know nothing about, or you know a few bits about. But I think that's what makes it interesting. I've liked researching into the conspiracies of the 20th century, finding what oddball stuff's out there. You just think, well, I didn't know that. That's interesting. You know,
you've gone down the rabbit hole.
And I love going to bed at night time, and you've got your book, and you think you've come up with some idea, and you think, but what if he could be his older uncle? He could be his uncle. What if it's his nephew? You know, you get these moments of inspiration. Yes. And what if that? Now I've got it. What if that there becomes that, and that we move that around a bit? Well, you start thinking like this, and you write side stories. So lots of side stories that you can throw in, which I think is great with this one, because you can instantly go anywhere with it. You can talk about any subject. You can go, well, Yuri can out of nowhere can say, I had trouble with my uncle last year. Why? You know, he's a baker. There's a whole story about his uncle and having a baker's shop, and there's a whole big story about that. There's loads of and they're in the most terrible of conditions. In the third one, they're really in trouble in the third book, you know. So, no, is there anything else you'd like to ask me? Because you say I thought we were going to be like 20 minutes or something. So.
I know, no, so it's like 1 hour, 4:47. No, we've like sort of covered everything. I just wanted to say thank you for sort of doing it, taking the time out, and what I said, I'll put your description I'll put your links in the description of the podcast, and also I'll do it on, I'm not on Facebook or Twitter, I'm only on Instagram, but I will put it on the podcast description.
Yeah, well,
go out.
SamLucasBooks.com, you know, is your 3 W's, SamLucasBooks.com. It will take you to the website, and you can have a quick look, and that'll show you the covers, and you can actually, from my website, you can buy the first two books. It does a link straight to Amazon.
Oh, I'll just put your description on then. Yeah, from them there.
If you do my website, they go to the website, get a link from that. I don't know. The other side that I have difficulty with is probably the phone side. Maybe what it looks like on a phone, I'm not quite sure. But it should work. But Sam Lucas, if you go onto Amazon and type in Sam Lucas Books, Beneath the Dome or Beyond the Dome, they both come up as either paperback or ebook. So, you know, say the name again. Sam Lucas is my name. Sam Lucas is my website. If you type in Beneath the Dome, Sam Lucas, Beyond the Dome, Sam Lucas on Amazon, you will find it. I guarantee you will enjoy it. You will laugh. If you don't, you're emotionally dead.
Yeah, definitely. Or just got no taste. But yeah, we'll like put everything in the description, and then I'll put it on the story on Instagram, and I'll put it on my post on Instagram, and hopefully we'll get people listening to this and coming to your site and buying your books.
Well, I hope so. Yeah, just to say,
me too.
I really do. No, it'd be great. It'll sort of spur me on to sort of move forward as well. As I say, the next three books, which will be a lot for you to read, you know, it's great. And once you get into Downfall, you know, you're really into the thick of the story then. there's a load more characters to come, people you haven't read about. There's, you know, it's, I won't say anything because it will spoil it, but there's so much more coming in.
Well, no, but yeah, we'll do that. And also I'll start lending the book out to people, and like they can read it, and if like they want to read more, they'll have to buy the second book. So I won't lend them the second book, they can buy it themselves. I'll entice them with the first book.
Yes, very good.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for doing that. And like I say, if you want to come back on the podcast and talk about conspiracies completely separate from your writing, you can do. But again, it's a free speech podcast and it's all unedited. So anyone's welcome to come on the podcast and talk about anything. Even if we don't agree, this podcast is for everyone to come on and get their opinions and word and thoughts out there so others can hear it.
Yeah, well, that's great. Just say, I'm not tied to anyone giving it. If somebody came on and produced some, you know, some hard facts for me, I'm quite happy to accept them. You know, if you can prove to me the world is round, that's brilliant. If you can prove we went, that's terrific. I'm not one of these advocates saying, well, we didn't do that. That didn't happen. You know, if it's out there, all I know is there's always an element of truth behind every conspiracy.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, the light there is, but we know the earth covered in a dome, don't we, because you've put it in your book.
All you have to think about throughout your life is, even in the most mundane boring moments, is there's always something going on.
There is Well, thanks again, Sam, for coming on, and I'll put all your links and everything in the description, and it should be on tonight after all, like the latest Tuesday, but I'll have to convert everything to MP3. But that's the boring side of podcasting and doing it over Skype. So thanks again.
Very good.
All right. Cheers, Sam. Thank you. Bye bye.
Cheers, Sam.
Bye.
All right, bye.
Bye.
The Tea Biscuits Podcast.